Hey, how's it going? If you're new here, welcome. Something Shifted is about identity after interruption. It's about who we become after a life quake hits and the stories we tell ourselves when everything changes. And I think you're gonna like it here. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Today's story belongs to Jess.
It was more, I guess, like meeting myself and learning who I really was. And I think I'm still in the process of maybe accepting it. Probably still in a bit of a mindset of, I can fix every little thing that I struggle with it, and everything that's mildly debilitating.
That's next, right after this. If you're one of those people that believe rest is a luxury, we can't be friends. Real change is exhausting, and even when your mind is ready, your body has kept the score and it can't keep up without proper recovery. So I've started taking Solol's magnesium glycinate. It helps with muscle energy, nervous system support, and I'm honestly feeling a lot less fatigued. You can learn more about Solol and their full range of supplements for healthy aging on Solol, solal.co.za. I want to let you in on some of the Something Shifted behind the scenes action. Firstly, I always talk a little bit of smack with the guests as we're testing microphones and settling in.
It's the S24 Ultra, but the Google Pixel is really nice.
And Jess knows a lot about tech stuff and videos and social media content. It's part of her career. And also, she's married to Grant, who is a serious tech geek. I say very lovingly.
I actually just got the Flip, but I haven't brought myself to switch over because any change takes me like a whole month to get used to. We just got standing desks and I'm dreading it because I know it's a big change and I just don't want to do it. So they're just standing there in their boxes, not being used because I can't bring myself to redo cable management or move things around.
Jess is married to Grant. Grant is one of the best people I know, which is why I asked him to be the best man at my wedding more than a decade ago. And so we were very happy when he found his person a couple of years ago. Jess worked many jobs while she was studying fashion design, and she was working in marketing for a fashion house before COVID hit, which is when she met Grant.
And then it was just a sort of natural transition from we're sitting at home playing games, now we're doing it socially and streaming, and then that picked up and became a career. And then the rest is sort of a blur, and now I somehow do social media and video production, and I've just learned a whole lot of things along the way. And the entire degree and everything I studied, I use never.
I also want you to know that Jess and Grant are parents to the lovely Jamie.
She's really funny, unintentionally so, but also sometimes quite intentionally. Like, you wouldn't think a three-year-old's jokes would be good, but they're actually every now and then quite funny, which is great.
I'd like to vouch for Jamie's sense of humor. Since she found a magic stick in our garden a couple of weeks back and started creating magic spells that turned adults into frogs, if you were lucky, and couches, if you weren't.
And then there's a lot of her that's definitely her dad. Like, they both love talking about things. I took her with me to get my nails done the other day, and she spoke for 45 minutes straight, nonstop, didn't take a breath. The nail tech was, you could see, she was probably so happy that we left. And I did give her a really nice tip for basically having a toddler soundboard over for so long. But she's also like really creative like Grant, and she loves drawing, and she's so into... Even at three, she understands like animation, and she, when we watch an animated movie or especially stop motion, she wants to watch the behind the scenes and then see how everything's made and done. And apparently this holiday we're going to make our own movie. I don't think she understands how much work goes into that, and it's not a 10-minute job, but we'll see.
Three amazingly creative people with so much personality and enthusiasm and kindness. So it's easy to look at them and assume that life is easy. But the past couple of years have been incredibly hard. Parenthood is sometimes described as the roughest hood you'll ever live in. And no matter the books you read or the classes you take, nothing can quite prepare you for the physical onslaught of it all. Jess had a really challenging pregnancy, where she felt ill for most of it. And as a new mom, Jess wasn't coping at all.
I think a lot of people might understand the feeling of like losing your temper, for example. This is beyond that. This is, you often blank out. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing or saying. We, at a stage, I had to, when things were really bad, I had to always sit in the back of the car with the child locks on because I would bolt into traffic. I'd just be having a meltdown, and it's this overwhelming panic where you almost feel like you need to get out of your body. And so I would just bolt and run, and Grant would have to stop the car and like stop other cars.
This was not how Jess pictured motherhood. And it certainly wasn't the idea of parenthood that she was sold through reels and reels of perfect parenting on social media.
So I obviously was not doing well. Me couldn't understand what was happening, and I couldn't understand what was happening to myself. And I kept saying, I know parenting's supposed to be difficult, but this is crazy. This is just like nothing's working and nothing's helping. And I got into like a, I think, a bit of a hole of despair where I thought, what have I done? And this is obviously not for me. And I'm the worst parent and the worst person and the worst partner on earth.
I have yet to meet a parent who hasn't at least once felt like they weren't coping. For most people, though, one night of decent sleep and some good coffee can erase that feeling, albeit temporarily. But that's not what these meltdowns felt like. And Jess was having them frequently.
You know, it's not really something that's as controllable. I'm going to say as controllable as a temper, because a temper sort of is something that you can lose, but you can also take a few breaths and control. Whereas a meltdown, by the time you're having it, there's nothing you can do to stop it. It's a train going off the tracks. You kind of just, almost like a seizure, have to let it just happen and pass. And make sure you do it as safely and as away from people, whatever you need, as possible. But it's hard to describe what it feels like, because it's just like an overwhelming sense of fear. And then you black out, and then you come to and you're exhausted. And sometimes it can take like 2 weeks to recover from that.
So this is not what most parents feel or do. Jess was having a really hard time, which meant Grant was having a really hard time. And so was Jamie. This was a lonely, scary season, and they were desperate. They needed something. Anything. And that something ended up being a diagnosis. I'm going to let you in on even more of our behind the scenes, because there's this little ritual that I go through with each of my guests. And it always happens before we start our conversation. And then, of course, I cut it out and you never hear it. Until now. You see, I ask each of my guests to describe the term lifequake in their own words. If I had to give you the task of writing the description in Merriam-Webster's dictionary for the word lifequake, how would you describe that word?
My goodness.
What comes to mind for you?
It would be a fission in your life that is caused by external factors And it's on you whether you shake with the quake or if you fall in the cracks.
Jess's definition sounds like a proper dictionary write-up. And she's certainly the first guest to use the word fission. In fact, she might be the only person I've ever heard say that out loud.
I read dictionaries for fun as a kid, which is shocking that no one's ever diagnosed me for something, because I thought that was a fun Tuesday, sitting and reading a dictionary.
As a kid, Jess loved words. Words can give us power and freedom. Having the right words help us connect with others, allowing us to express what we're thinking, feeling, especially when we are thinking or feeling things others aren't. For Jess, the word autism provided a lot of answers.
So the diagnosis basically happened after we had Jamie, which is actually quite common. I've found through the therapy that people often are diagnosed after kids, because you are very capable of accommodating yourself through life and sort of masking and maybe being okay to a point until you have kids, which is a difficult thing for anyone. It comes with a very specific set of challenges, and that was sort of the thing that then pushed me over the edge from being able to sort of cope to not being able to cope.
Getting to the diagnosis was a complex journey in itself. The journey started by making an appointment at the Neurodiversity Center for an assessment.
That was a month of going back and doing multiple assessments and sitting with a therapist and going through 200 questions a day, and then working with an OT and doing sensory tests, and it was just the craziest month of my life. And then after that, you get a 12-page report that tells you what sort of autism you have and are and what level, because there's all of those things, and what sort of sensory processing disorders you might have, and all of the other comorbidities, like I have alexithymia and a whole bunch of other things.
Alexithymia is a personality trait. It's characterized by difficulty identifying, describing, and understanding one's own feelings and distinguishing them from bodily sensations.
There is a bit of a test where they give you sort of eyes or mouths or just portions of people's faces, and they ask you to identify the emotion, and I got zero. Zero correct. I've even done it with Grant, and he would very obviously say, oh, that person's amused, and I'd be like, they look angry to me, and then he gets all of them right and I get zero, and I just go, oh, okay, well, I don't know. Obviously can't read any facial expressions on people.
So after a month of testing, Jess finally had a diagnosis. Before Jess had the word autism to explain why she was struggling so much as a new mom, she'd also seen the advice on social media and had friends whisper in her ears about being a new parent. But none of it was working.
A lot of the advice, I guess, that you're given as a parent when you're struggling was not working for us. And I've now learned was quite counterintuitive. You know, an example is if you have a colicky baby who's screaming and crying nonstop, the advice is to lean into it and like embrace the crying. But if you're neurodivergent and you have auditory processing disorders, being around a screaming kid for 4 hours is probably the worst thing you can do. And you should do the opposite thing and remove yourself from the situation, regulate, and then come back.
Having the diagnosis, having the word that explains why seemingly normal things are much harder for you, that's just the beginning.
Then that started, I guess, the entirely new process for me, which at the time was, I guess, fixing, right? I felt like I was a broken parent and I needed help, and it was working with an OT to be around a loud crying kid that's always touching you, and building up a tolerance for something like that until where I am now, where I can very happily have a child cough in my mouth or touch me with the stickiest fingers and not be reduced to tears, and be around a kid who's going through a meltdown and then not be pushed into the same meltdown where we're both sitting crying on the floor, which was never helpful, because when you're trying to regulate a child, you yourself can't be in a worse state than them. And sometimes I was crying harder than her, and it would get her to stop, because she'd be like, whoa, who's the one here that's, I thought I was upset, what are you doing? But you know, now we do it in a much more acceptable way.
I think a lot of us would like to believe that we, as society, have become better at accepting, understanding, and accommodating diagnoses of different or special or divergent, until it happens to you.
I genuinely felt really disempowered, and I had a bit of a grieving process, and it's absolutely fine that other people don't feel that way. The reason I felt that way is because, to me, I was like, oh, well, this is not fixable. So am I just going to struggle for the rest of my life with filling out forms and like doing basic tasks and struggling to live and struggling to be a parent and a partner and a friend and all these things that we're required to be? I've obviously moved past that now, and I've realized, okay, it wasn't a death sentence. But at the time, it did feel a little bit like that. It can be quite a devastating thing to go through, because you go, oh, well, the world isn't built for me, and there's nothing I can really do about it anymore.
So if we're honest, the world is quite an uncomfortable place for many of us. It's fast, it's loud, it's busy, it's bright. Sometimes it's physically inaccessible. And sometimes we just know that we aren't welcome. And the best we can do is get to know ourselves well enough to learn how to create safety within ourselves and around us.
My interoception is so awful. I often don't realize it's coming until it's a little bit late. I'm very grateful that Grant has picked up on a lot of triggers, and he'll often say to me, like, I'm going to take Jamie for a walk, you need to put your headphones on, and you know, like, he'll kind of gently guide me towards stopping whatever I'm doing, and just, he says to me, I can see it in your face, and I don't know what that means. He'll sort of guide me towards all of the coping mechanisms I have. If I do feel it, I can usually feel I'm a little bit more irritable than normal. Everything feels sharp and loud, and lights are hurting my eyes and sounds are hurting my ears that normally wouldn't. And that's when I go, okay, something's wrong. And I maybe need to not go out to a play park with you guys today. Maybe you should go by yourselves, because if I'm around a whole bunch of screaming kids, it's probably not going to be good for me. Or I shouldn't go out today, because even wind can set me off. Like, being in a windy place, the sensory thing of being blasted with wind, 2 minutes in, I'm in tears. So I can pick it up sometimes, but it's also been quite a reliance on other people to pick it up for me.
And maybe the hardest part of receiving a diagnosis is when it comes with an additional label, like disability. Of all the labels they handed us for Zoe, disabled was the one that we couldn't quite comprehend. A label that's meant to define a six-month-old life is not easy to accept. And for Jess, autism is a disability that she lives with.
I very much frame it in the sense of disability, because it disables me so much, and it's so debilitating. And I obviously have no problem with other people framing it in a more positive way for themselves. And if that helps their journey of acceptance and having this part of themselves, which is such a big thing, be a bit easier, that's absolutely fine. I have struggled with that. And I'm also someone who's like quite a proponent on like the language we use is so important. And something that is a disability should be called that in order to acquire the help that we need. If everyone stops seeing something that is difficult and a struggle as a disability, and they all start seeing it as a superpower or this little quirk, it becomes very difficult for people who have higher support needs to access the help that they need. So I'm obviously not on that end of things. I'm a mid to low support sort of autistic person. But I still feel the advocacy for people on the higher support end, where we can't just change the language and make autism this manic pixie fun thing, when it is something that so many people struggle with. And I mean, there's adults who are never going to be able to have a job or not live without a caretaker, and we can't really call it a superpower then.
So it's important that we frame autism not as a superpower, nor as a death sentence. It's somewhere in between, which is why describing it like a spectrum makes so much sense. It's the kind of brain difference that shows up in different ways and needs different kinds of support.
There are people that struggle to get diagnoses, especially if you mask really well and you present yourself as pretty neurotypical. But the neurodiversity center that I went to, I think they're quite attuned to the fact that a lot of people are late diagnosed and they've been making accommodations for themselves. So they ask the questions and the standardized test in a different way. So for an example, a question might be, do you have sensory issues with clothing? And you might be quick to say, oh no. But it's because you've been accommodating yourself. You only buy clothes of a certain fabric. You wear your socks inside out so you don't feel seams. You only buy a certain type of clothing that fits on you. So instead of asking, do you have sensory issues with clothes, they'll ask you, do you have one type of brand or clothing that you always buy or always wear? Do you come home and immediately change after you've been in your outside clothes in the world? Do you always wear socks? Do you never wear socks because you don't like the feeling? So they ask like quite specific questions around accommodations you might already be making, which for me made, one, the diagnosis easier, but two, it also made me realize the things that I've been doing to this point that I didn't realize were autistic behaviors. So it also made it quite easy to then explain to people, like family, for example, who've been around you for 30 years now, who suddenly go, since when? You've always just been like this. You can go, yes, well, the reason I always wear socks is because I don't like the sensory change of cold and hot or feeling any textures. And that's just one of my sensory things. And I know you've seen me do it since I was a kid, but that's because I've had these sensory issues since I was a kid. It's as simple as that.
It's also important to understand that autism isn't just a medical diagnosis. Now it is increasingly wrapped up in debates about funding, education, identity, and who gets to tell the story of what autism really is. So while the increased awareness and open conversations on social media are useful, this isn't a conversation that should be guided by influencer hot takes or politicians with small orange-tinted hands. It is nuanced. It is personal.
People should be able to self-diagnose or do this thing that I call being peer-reviewed, which is when a lot of your friends go, there's something about you, and we all agree. And I think whether you have a formal diagnosis or not, you should be able to make accommodations and do these things in your life and go to a therapist or an OT and get the help you need. I think the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people sometimes will only make accommodations for you if there's a piece of paper that says that. You know, you can't always go into work and say, for example, I can only work a certain amount of hours, but if you have a piece of paper that says that, then they'll make that accommodation. Or sometimes, you know, you can go to family and say, I have autism, and they'll go, no, you don't, even if you present all of the information, until a professional hands a piece of paper and says, there you go. Although in my case, even that didn't convince a lot of people. But it certainly does help sort of justify why you need accommodations to people, because sometimes simply asking isn't enough. And you know, even with certain therapies and OT and stuff, medical aid only covers it if you've got the piece of paper. And it just becomes an incredibly expensive process. And even getting that piece of paper is thousands of rands. And it's something that's not available to everyone. So, yes, getting a formal diagnosis was great in terms of actually getting accommodations I needed from the people around me who might have not done it otherwise.
As Jess shares some of her experiences, I find myself relating. I'm well aware that many of my own sensory processing issues have become progressively more noticeable and sometimes debilitating. In the years post-hospital trauma with Zoe, and as I nod along in this conversation, I do wonder.
There is the anti-self-diagnosis police, I don't know, what we, the unofficial commission of autism diagnosis, where you're not allowed to not have a formal diagnosis and then call yourself autistic, or they think that they're better themselves because they have this piece of paper. I personally don't feel that way, and I wish everyone else didn't. And I don't feel like someone else's experience invalidates my own, but there's nothing I can do to influence other people.
Jess has tried to be open and honest about her journey and take people in her life along for the ride, and hopefully to make the world a little bit gentler for others going through the same or similar experiences.
I think I have been surprised by some of the people that haven't understood. I think most people that go through a diagnosis, you end up losing some friends and you end up losing some family, and I mean, that's been difficult. But I think you sort of trade those people for the community that you find, and there's a community in this. And it's even the strangest thing when I go out now or I go to events or, you know, all of these third spaces that I go to now, and you meet someone who you go, are we the same? I think so. And you sort of immediately get on with that person, and you can now sort of understand why you get along with them really well. And there is quite a lot of acceptance here. And once you know this part of yourself, I mean, any autistic person will tell you, they meet another autistic person, it's immediately like, oh, thank goodness. Because, okay, we can be ourselves with each other now and we can cut right to it. And there's no, oh, we need to do small talk, we need to do all of these things. We can kind of just be ourselves, and that's been quite nice.
It is quite nice to feel understood, to feel seen, to be included. In our experience as a family of three, navigating Zoe's very obvious needs, like mobility, is a little bit easier because most people will help. They'll move something out of the way for us, for example. And most people won't park in a disabled parking spot. But it is much, much harder to communicate the other support that she needs. And to be honest, the support that we need too.
I think another thing that is also quite interesting is I live with someone who has ADHD.
That someone is Grant.
We need the complete opposite things, which has also been quite challenging to navigate. I really like structure and routine, and things need to be done a certain way. And when you have a kid, that also really helps, because kids also like structure and routine and planning and things that are stable. Whereas my husband likes novelty and spontaneity and things to be a little bit more novel. And so that's been a bit of a challenge for him. And throughout this process, he's probably gotten the shortest end of the stick, because he's had to make the most accommodations that go against sort of things that he needs. He might like a lot of sensory input and loud music and blasting songs at home. And then both myself and my daughter go, why is there so many sounds in the house? And then he suddenly has to reel it in. So bless him. For making the most accommodations out of anyone in this process.
Grant has stepped up in all the ways that he knows how. But what I didn't know is that he likes to make sure that Jess and Jamie are fed properly in the mornings.
Yeah, my breakfast of choice is something I don't make myself. And I'm very grateful that I'm married to someone who every morning brings me breakfast in bed with a coffee. Because I'm not the morning person in the house, and neither is our daughter. And often her and I will be cuddled in bed, half asleep, grumpy. And then thankfully Grant is a bit perkier and he comes and sort of wakes us up as slowly as possible. Like deers in a forest, just gently waking us up.
Did I not tell you Grant is one of the best people I know? And Jess agrees.
I've made a lot of bad decisions in my life and a lot of things I regret, but who I married is not one of them. I am so thankful and grateful, and especially having a kid, I could not have picked a better person. And I mean, we often see, especially with social media these days, a little window into how other people are sort of coping with partners and kids, and they're not. And I'm just really grateful that I'm with someone who not only has just been a great dad, he's been a great partner in any normal situation, but especially with going through something that is such a life change on both of us. And it impacted both of us. It really did. Your partner getting any sort of diagnosis, health-wise, mental health-wise, disability-wise, it affects everyone, and especially the person that you live with, that you're around the most.
Jess is feeling much better about who she is and how she is. Motherhood is no longer the thing that breaks her, but the thing that brings her joy, even though it is hard at times. But now the trio are starting to live the life that they want for their futures.
Because the situation for us personally was so dire and so it needed so much correction, we might have overcorrected to the point where every single accommodation and thing that we've changed has been for me, and then Grant sort of waiting in the sidelines going, okay, at some point are we going to take care of me too? So I think we're slowly trying to steer the ship back to the middle ground, where now there's more of a partnership happening. And I think I've tried to do things where I've said, you need to like go out with your friends and do novel things and just go have some fun. And I mean, previously we couldn't do that because I was too scared to be left alone with our child, because I thought, what if I have a meltdown and what if she starts crying? Whereas now I'm obviously in a place where he could go away for 2 weeks and I'd be like, I'm going to be tired when you get back, so don't go longer than 2 weeks. But I mean, you can go and do things. So I think we're also now getting back into the rhythm of things where there's sort of solving the needs and wants of two people again.
Hosting Jess, Jamie and Grant at our house for a braai was so easy. And to be honest, it isn't always easy for the three of us in the Lewitz clan to just hang out with other people. But the Hineses have embraced our different from the start. They've watched us lose ourselves in the trauma and rebuild a life that is different, but beautiful.
And there's maybe even things that my husband really loved about me that are gone now. Because it just wasn't who I was, and it's maybe who I was sort of pretending to be or fawning. It's a huge ask when your partner has any sort of major life change come upon them, and they have to change so many things about themselves. And there was that. I mean, the person that I was before diagnosis, she's really not around anymore.
These days, Jess is thriving in her new normal and finds much joy in being a mom, a wife, and a partner. We may lose many things during lifequakes. Things that are precious to us get stripped away in seismic events. But perhaps the small joy is that we can lose our masks too. If something shifted has moved you, made you feel seen, or simply kept you company, the best way to say thank you is to leave us a 5-star rating on your listening platform. It takes 5 seconds and honestly means the world. Subscribe so you never miss a human-centered story, and check out the show notes for the Something Shifted soundtrack playlist, a compilation of songs we've listened to while making this season. Songs that make us feel a little less lonely and a lot more empowered. Many thanks to Rue, my executive producer, for additional writing on this episode. And as always, thank you for listening. Bye.